Graphic Audio. A movie in your mind.
Previously on Doomsday Warrior.
Sections A through H are completely destroyed.
President Jevnov, we're under attack.
I can see that, you idiot. Those Free Fighters must be mad to think that they can take the capital.
It's not Free Fighters. It's KGB forces.
My hold over the army is growing each passing day. And as for the bombs, I've found 5 anti-matter missiles. Mine to use as I see fit.
Do you have something more important than survival on your mind?
You know what's been on my mind, Rock. Do you love her?
Yes.
Do you love me too?
I do.
Then there's your answer.
The KGB have captured anywhere from 60 to 75% of the Red Army fortresses.
I propose that I contact Premier Vasily and offer to assist his Red Army in driving KGB forces out of the country.
But you're talking about risking the lives and the futures of towns and cities across the country on something that doesn't need to happen. And that goes against everything I work for.
Now, Rath, because of both the risk of this attack and the danger of getting double-crossed by the Red Army troops you're bringing in, convince the Century City Council to cut the number of Free Fighters for this attack by 60%.
60%?! Wrath went over my head after I left?!
Kim, one of us might die out there today. I think...
Yeah, let's shake on it. If we live, we'll work something out about Rock.
Fire!
Seen anything yet? Just the ruins. Months ago, this was an apartment complex. Then Kilov dropped his bomb. I can't stand this place, Rock. It's creeping me out.
Somebody's got to go down there and clear the place out. You can't just sit down there, a monument to neutron bombs and death. We're clearing this place out, one body at a time. As long as we don't join them. I think I see a body over here. Archer!
Archer, lift!
Yeah, lift that girder over there.
That's it, Archer. You're doing it. Good job, Archer. Now let's see them.
Ted Roxon looked upon the first bodies they had found under the collapsed sublevel of Century City. Through the thick paint faceplate of his radiation suit, he saw a man cradling his 8-year-old daughter. Their bodies were green with rot and peeling from radiation.
He must have tried to shelter her from the collapse.
No man can protect his daughter from something like that. He must have been killed instantly from that girder falling on him.
The child. It's Cindy Adams. She had been coming to my classes, Rock, every day. Her father had been bringing her to the children's self-defense classes. She would have been good, Rock. Real good.
Is it? Hold on. Yeah. This area has some of the highest radiation yet. Anybody in here would have died almost instantly.
At least there wasn't much pain.
We're gonna get that sorry son of a bitch, Roxon. We're gonna bring Kilov to his own personal hell.
I know. We've gotta vent this tunnel. Get the gases and particles outside. Should be an emergency exit just around this curve, according to the map.
I've got my M87K charges wired and ready, Rock.
Not too much, Detroit. Just enough to get rid of this gas. We don't want to risk a collapse. Our red spy drones finding us.
The spy drones aren't much of a concern, though, Rock. We haven't seen one of those in weeks. What with the Civil War and all.
Only need one, Detroit. We only need one.
I know, Rock. I know. Stuff set. In 3, 2, 1. Is it working, Roxon?
It's... Yes. The gas is being sucked out through the hole you made, Detroit. All right, everybody. We're going on ahead. We're gonna hit up the Q section. Once we clear out that tunnel, we'll be done for the day.
Which way?
We're going this way. Follow me, men, and stay close.
Roxon led his team through the elaborate tunnel systems towards the Q section. There were hundreds of passageways, many of them built when the original highway had been linked with mine shafts over 100 years earlier. There were tunnels for ventilation, for electrical connection, to different sections of the 2-mile-long structure. In addition, 33-foot-wide thermal heat shaftways had been dug out over the last century by the builders of the free-fighting city. They contained hot steam from volcanic sources.
Here, this is the Q section, the entrance hall to some of the newer weapons labs.
It's downright stacked up to the top. There's no way we're gonna be able to dig our way through.
Yeah. Should I set a charge? A small one, Detroit. If there's no tunnel beyond this debris, if Q section is completely collapsed, a large explosion could send all its rubble shooting out at us. Put one right in the middle between those two big rocks. Set the charge for 2.5.
Detroit carefully placed the cylindrical charges in a space between the cement boulders, and they all retreated to what they thought was a sufficient distance.
You ready? Detroit, blow it.
Day Warrior, America's Zero Hour.
Man, in my head. Oh, shit. My helmet. It must have been shattered from the cave-in. Anyone there? Chen! Detroit! Hello, anybody? Answer me! Archer! Where are you?
Roxon played his flashlight across the mound of debris in front of him. He saw a hand through one of the spaces. He crawled forward. There was just about enough room in the tangle of debris to do so, for about 15 feet. He saw a powdery face sticking out of the crush of rock and dust. And somehow, Archer had a dumb smile plastered across his bearded jaw.
Hang on, buddy. I'll get you out.
Roxon dug out the mountain man from a pile of rock and debris, being careful not to dislodge any support-bearing beams. The cave could collapse again at any moment. Next time, they might not be so lucky.
Thank you. Good grief.
No problem. Did you see anyone else go down?
Yeah, that way.
Archer pointed to a rabbit hole of an opening. Roxon played his light on it. It was a small alcove they had passed, just an access to a storage area.
Archer, are you hurt? Can you help me?
Yes, me help.
Okay. You see that beam over there? If you hold it up, I should be able to crawl through there and help whoever might be still alive in there.
Can do.
Good job, Archer.
Roxon crawled forward to the hole, praying the bear of a man would be able to hold up that part of the tunnel. Otherwise, there'd be no escape. The Doomsday Warrior crawled forward, barely able to fit through, and found the narrow hallway beyond. He saw a shape in the beam of light.
Rock, help me!
You're doing great, buddy. Just keep it up. Anyone there? Anybody? Anyone at all? Can you hear me? Hey, I think I heard something. Yes!
Roxon continued crawling down the narrow passageway, the air gray with clouds of fine dust. He was able to move forward another 15 feet, sliding around the beams that lay snapped, the timbers sliced jaggedly, their splinters reaching up, trying to snag him. At last he could go no further, as he came face to face with a wall of collapsed granite and concrete. Rock put his mouth up against the narrow crack along one side, where he saw a shaft of light.
Anyone alive? Anyone at all?
Rock! Is that you?
Chen! Yeah, I hear you, thank God!
Yeah. Believe it or not, we're all here except Archer. Bruises, blood, but everyone's alive.
Listen, pal. Archer's holding this place up right now, but this whole cavern could collapse at any moment. I remember your passageway comes to a dead end about 50 feet behind you, with nothing but solid granite mountains for a full half mile. We have to go out my way.
Go ahead, Brock. We're with you, whatever you decide. Good luck.
I'd hoped you'd say that. Now get back, all of you. I've got two charges left on my belt. I'm gonna wedge them about halfway down this wall here and try to blast it open. The moment it's clean, run. You hear me?
Roger. We're heading to the back. We'll rendezvous in about 10 seconds. Hope I see you again.
Me too.
Roxon pulled back from the space and took the cylindrical charges out. The thought of their deaths at his hands was something he couldn't let himself ponder. He pushed in with his arm as far as he could until the explosive packs were over a yard into the blockage. He shimmied backward until he was just shielded by a barrel-sized chunk of mountain that had fallen down.
Here goes. Chen helped Rock stand and move out. Everybody link hands!
It was the blind leading the blind in the impenetrable smoke. After 30 feet, they could just spot the light coming from behind Archer. They avoided the broken support beams and twisted spears of metal as the torch led, followed by Chen, then Roxon, and finally McCoughlin. Their suits were all tattered and their faceplates smashed. No telling how badly they would have been hurt if they hadn't been protected by them. They reached Archer, whose suit was dripping with sweat, matting his dusty hair.
Archer!
Roxon threw his arms under a crossbeam next to Archer, taking up some of the weight. But the pressure was enormous. It was a miracle that the 7-foot-tall mountain man was able to keep the place up himself. But it was now just a matter of time.
You guys run ahead! We'll get you!
But Rock!
Go!
We'll be waiting for you upstairs, Rock.
Right on the count of three. We both let go and get the hell out of here. You understand?
Understand!
One. Two. Yeah!
Rock! The arch gave way the moment they pulled free and came down toward them even as they moved away. They both tore ass into the wider tunnel, the beams of the ceiling cracking just behind them, one after another, as if following them down the passage. They ran down the half-blocked passages without a glance back, ran as the lowest level of Century City collapsed all around them.
Okay, we can stop now.
Hey, Rock. You got some dust in your hair.
Do I? Well, I guess it's time for us to go then. Archer?
Yeah?
You did well, pal. If it weren't for you, we'd all still be stuck down there. Or worse. I'm recommending you for the city's highest decoration.
Archer, good!
Once back in the living levels of Century City, the men went through the decontamination procedure to ensure that no radioactive material was allowed to come into the city. They came to a room filled with telephone booth-sized chambers and disrobed, putting the high-rad suits in special lead deposit boxes.
Please disrobe and enter the decontamination chambers.
Already did that, lady.
Thank you. Please enter the chambers. Stage 1, rinsing. Stage 2, vacuum. Stage 3, ultraviolet.
Rock put on the set of carefully folded coveralls that had been automatically deposited on a table next to the chamber. The lightweight white cotton one-piece outfit felt good, cool against the skin after the anti-rad suit's stifling coarseness. He'd only been in the radiated caverns unprotected for a few minutes. Any longer, and even Century City's decontamination process wouldn't have been able to save him. Century City had been born over 100 years earlier, in a rage of atomic fires. At the height of the Cold War, the USSR had finally developed the technology they needed to best the American military. Satellites that could track any incoming object and blow it out of the sky before it hit. With the combined advantage of a surprise first strike and a functional space defense system, the Premier gathered the courage to damn the planet to hell and push the button. 93.7% of all missiles launched at the USSR and its allies had been shot down from space, but not before several of her own cities were hit. Millions died, but not nearly as many as in the US. Missiles hit Aspen, Cheyenne, Las Vegas, and Omaha. Detroit, Tacoma, Texarkana, and Little Rock were hit. 50 million died in the first month, and millions more after that. The global temperature dropped 10 degrees as the millions of tons of debris was shot into the troposphere. Plants, animals, and entire ecosystems died from the shock. The oceans held heat longer than the air, so the coastal cities that remained kept their seasons. But the severe temperature differences brought in catastrophic hurricanes. Category 5 storms continued for a full year across the eastern seaboard. Key West was scoured to bare rock. The Russians, having traveled via sea, plane, and Arctic tank, encountered a disorganized and demoralized military force. The president was in Oregon at the time of the strike. That entire state had been reduced to miles of overlapping craters. The cities that were still livable turned into red forts and factories, shipping food and supplies back to Mother Russia. The few bombs that made the trip to the USSR had obliterated their farmland. Originally, Century City itself was just a highway tunnel that collapsed at both ends when the nukes hit nearby, sealing hundreds of cars, trucks, and trailers in its blackness. Back then, on Interstate 70, winding out of Denver and into the mountains toward Utah, thousands of vehicles had been moving through the 5-mile tunnel that bored through the heart of the mountain. The nukes that had struck Colorado Springs, Longmont, and Fort Collins quaked the Rockies, and the tunnel entryways were buried in an avalanche of rocks, sealing off the sea of humanity. It saved those trapped inside the 8-lane tunnel from the direct effects of the blasts and from the rain of fallout, which obscured the sun for weeks. Those that survived, men and women and children from all the cross-sections of American culture, divvied up the food and water from the 2 tractor trailers trapped inside that were filled to the brim with supermarket goods. Then they looked at one another and tried to figure out just what the hell to do. Days later, they burrowed through the eastern entrance to tunnel for air, which they cleansed through makeshift filtration systems. However, they soon understood the magnitude of what had happened. The first man to step out sighted Soviet airlifters dropping troops over Denver. Survival was the name of the game now. The highway people cleaned themselves off again and went to work. The dreams, careers, loves, and hates that had meant everything to them just days before were now just memories. They concentrated on constructing some kind of base, a headquarters to live in, and from which they could strike out at the Russians. They would build an underground city, networking nearby mining tunnels and the tunnel of Interstate 70. They would set up lighting, ventilation, even hydroponics for the cultivation of their own food supply. The 5 miles of Americans included mavens in almost every field. Scientists, doctors, chemists, mechanics. They were the people whose country had been born of guts and imagination, and an eternal struggle for freedom. They swore they would all one day be free again, even if it took 100 years. Hence, they named their subterranean home Century City. As he walked through the wide central square of the underground city, Roxon saw Rath and Shannon in the crowd. Rath, the intel chief for the city, was a slow, stooped, gray-headed man. Still, he was a commanding figure, with his hawk-like nose and heavy eyebrows, under which rested the deep gray eyes of a man of suspicious nature and high intelligence. Shannon, his assistant, was a well-endowed strawberry blonde of about 30 years of age. Her hair had grown straw-like, and her complexion had grown a little ruddy since she had been caught outside in the neutron blast several months ago. But she was recovering well. She counterbalanced the dour, moody Rath with a bright-eyed efficiency and optimism. Rock was about to pass them by, as he had several things he'd rather not say to Rath in public, but Rath's keen eyes caught him.
Roxon, would you come here, please?
Hello, Rath.
Roxon, I heard about your near disaster in the tunnel. I'd like to discuss with you soon, in private, your tendency for foolhardy, reckless adventure for the sake of adventure. Not just today, but at Fort Minsk, on many occasions. You seem to forget your rank, your responsibilities,
First of all, this isn't very private. Secondly, I know what I'm capable of accomplishing. We didn't lose a single man down there and...
But you could have. And you brought down some very important men. Chen doesn't have to come along.
Chen comes along because he's the best man for the job. And while we're on the subject, I think the best men for the job at Fort Minsk were the people I asked for. If I'd wanted 60% less, I would have said so. If it weren't for the Sikhs and their siege equipment, we would have lost a hell of a lot more people. And I would have held you responsible for every man that died.
Not just me, Roxon. This is a democratic society and the vote's passed. Randolph called the meeting and raised the issue. I just brought it to a vote.
That's bullshit. You said it yourself at the meeting, Rath. What I suggested goes against everything you stood for. And I saw your face after the vote. You just didn't like how it turned out. And you cut off my support without me knowing. You might as well have supplied troops to the KGB.
That's not fair, Roxon. Your behavior has always been brash. Don't get me wrong. I'm glad you won the battle. If anything, it shows how good our troops really are. In the future, I might keep future losses at a minimum and always cut your men.
Why, you treasonous little...
Roxon!
Rock stopped and noticed that his fist was raised to strike. The entire room had stopped to look at the fracas. Rath's arms were in front of his face, cowering in terror. Once he realized he wasn't going to be killed, Rath lowered his arms and did his best to look down on Rock.
So, that's how you respond to opponents, with anger and threats? I'll be sure to let Council President Randolph know of your democratic ways.
At least I respect the Council's wishes. But go ahead. You build your little action committee with Randolph. You keep hiding and accusing and second-guessing. I'll be out there, making sure this country becomes free once more. That was a nice little private meeting, Rath. We'll have to do it again. Just not with so many people next time.
Shannon seemed torn for a minute between her boss and Roxon, but then took after the Doomsday Warrior, catching up to him out of sight of Rath.
Rock!
Shannon, I can't see how you can work with a man. He's nasty and gets nastier every day. And besides that, he's opposed to and continues to oppose almost every idea I have for waging war against Kilov and Vasily. What's this about him and Randolph working together?
Randolph's afraid of you, Roxon. He thinks you could take his job at any time.
Me? Why on earth would I want to be council president? I don't even know Arnold's rules of order.
Robert's rules of order. I know, Rock, I know.
You've had that cough for a while, Shannon. Are you okay?
Yeah. I'm still recovering from that neutron bomb. I'm pretty okay, considering that everybody else... Oh, I'm sorry, Rock.
Don't be. If it weren't for Lang, the technicians would have never made it as far as they did. And they managed to take out 5 of the 6 bombs. He died a hero, saving Century City. He wouldn't have wanted it any other way.
I know. I just sometimes wish that instead of Lang... Doesn't matter. Listen, Rock. The responsibilities of Rath's job are immense. That's why he is the way he is. You know how invaluable his network of spies and saboteurs in the Russian fortress cities are?
And every time he finds out that one of his operatives is caught and tortured to death, he feels it. He knows everything there is to know about his operatives. And when they die, it's like the death of a son. Rath is responsible for us knowing when Zhabnov so much as twitches, or where Kilov is slinking around. And he feels the weight of all of it, of the whole damned war against the Reds, on his shoulders. He just couldn't take it if the operation at Fort Minsk wasn't a success. The weight of so many dead would have been too much for him to bear.
You're right. Things have been bad, one disaster after another. The strain must be too much for him. God knows how any of us stay sane in all of this. I'll cool out, Shannon, I promise. And you, give him less coffee. Or else put tranquilizers in his cup, okay?
Okay, Rock. I'll see you around, okay?
Sure thing.
Rock walked into his room at 9:15. He had had a dinner at one of Century City's cafeterias, the Starlight. The rabbit stew, soy cheese, and 2 big slabs of whole grain bread were simple, but nourishing. But he barely closed the door, and hadn't even turned on the light when...
Who is it?
It's me, Rock.
Hello, Rona. What's wrong?
Oh, Rock. When I heard that there'd been a collapse in the tunnel you were working in, I... Can I come in?
Well, sure, Rona, anytime. Let me just turn on a light.
No, Rock, I... When I heard, I told myself and God that if you came out of the tunnel all right, I would stop this silly staying away from you. Stop it and tell you I love you. I don't care if you love Kim, too. As long as you want me, I'll be yours.
Rona, I do love you. I'll always love you. What I haven't liked is you're trying to be the only woman in my life. It can't be. Now. You understand? Since I met Kim?
Kim and I promised each other that neither of us would sleep with you until you made up your mind which one you wanted as a lover. So, don't tell her about this?
Mum's the word.
Rona unbuttoned her blouse. Her full breasts were silhouetted in the dim crack of light that spilled from under the door. Flushed with desire, she boldly put her long hands out and tore at his pants until they fell to the floor in a heap. They embraced as they fell to the bed, arms roaming and helping one another along. Clothes fell by the wayside as they pleasured each other for what seemed like hours. Finally, Rock put his arms around her, grabbed her behind each of her tan thighs, and pulled her up onto him. She guided him into her, slowly, her long legs wrapped around his waist, then locked together. He began pumping, slowly at first, as their passions grew faster until he was a jackhammer inside her. Rock gripped her even closer to him, moving her legs apart, pushing into the deepest recesses of her supple body, taking her to the peak of pleasure. Roxanne hadn't made love to Rona for months, yet their bodies followed each other's slightest nuance. Perfect. His eyes shut. He felt himself coming to a peak, and he pumped into her with powerful thrusts. As he came in a violent eruption, her entire form went rigid and then jerked wildly against him. The woman seemed to be trying to push him all into her, completely. For a moment, they merged into one being, joined together in the mindless bliss as old as time itself. Then they lay down, spent, exhausted, fulfilled. After she left, Roxanne tried to rest. He was alone for an hour.
Oh, back for more, huh?
Rock opened the door just a crack, as he was still nude. But instead of Rona, clad in a gold semi-transparent halter and an equally thin and clinging miniskirt, was Kim. She lifted her sky blue eyes at Rock.
Can I come in?
Sure. Let me just turn on the lights.
No, don't turn on the lights. There's enough for making love.
Roxanne had lived long enough in this world to know that sometimes one had to just go with the flow. Having both women he was in love with in Century City at the same time had its problems, but it also had its pleasures. She undid a hidden clasp, and her halter slipped down and fell on the floor, revealing her creamy large breasts and upturned nipples. Another quick movement, and the gold miniskirt likewise dropped to the floor, displaying Kim's wispy platinum hair in the V of her legs.
Please don't tell Rona I broke our agreement, but I had to come. I had to feel you. You're not mad, are you?
No, not at all.
I can't stay more than an hour. Rona is so jealous that she sometimes checks on my room to make sure I'm there. She doesn't think I can live up to our agreement to not sleep with you until you decide which one of us...
I won't tell. Not if you don't. Oh, do you know what time it is?
It's 3:30 a.m., Mr. Roczen. We got a message, sir. We picked this up just 20 minutes ago on one of our standard Russian radio interceptions. It was for your attention, sir. I hope I didn't disturb you.
No, you did the right thing. Thanks. What's it say?
Ted Roczen, in return for free fighter help in defeating Colonel Kilov at Fort Minsk and for helping to clear other KGB-held areas of the United Soviet States of America, I am going through with my promise to remove all nuclear weapons from the American continent. I know you have sufficient intelligence sources to verify the fact that they will be hauled out by airlifter and boat over the next 2 weeks. But I must warn you, Kilov has seized 5 truck-mounted cruise missiles from an arsenal in Idaho sector. He's headed north. We lost track of him in Canada. Make contact with me in order to coordinate our efforts to neutralize Kilov and these weapons. That's the end of the message.
Don't break radio silence. I'll take care of this. It's a military matter. Confidential.
Yes, sir. Schechter has told me that a meeting regarding the message will convene at 9 o'clock this morning.
Who's going to be there?
Well, you, Schechter, and because it concerns the security of Century City, Shannon and Rath.
Of course. Thank you.
Schechter rushed down the hallway in a most peculiar, jerking, leaning sort of run for an old man. But he didn't have regular legs. They had been rendered useless after Schechter was shot in the back 3 months ago. But the injury had just propelled Schechter's brilliance in a new direction. Servo-mechanical implants in his limbs synced up to his own brain. He invented the system and had been testing it out on himself. It was a fantastic breakthrough in technology that had spelled hope to countless Americans. First, though, he had to teach them to stop.
Out of the way, everybody! Out of the...
Your legs working well?
Thanks, Rock. Yes, they're working great. It's getting them to stop working is the problem these days. The damn things have been forgetting things again, Rock. I'm starting to think I made a mistake in the compression algorithm for the onboard neural net, Rock. I'm gonna have to jury-rig a wireless network between it and a remote storage computer until I have the time to test out new code.
That's, let's go to the conference room and get seated, Jack.
Seated? Let's just hope these silly sticks remember how to do that.
In the conference room, Rath was already seated, Shannon at his side. He looked up from his papers, his eyes magnified behind his strong pince-nez reading glasses. The nostrils in his large nose flared, and he frowned as a way of greeting. Roczen didn't bother to say hello. Instead, nodding to Shannon when she looked up, he slid a chair out for Dr. Schechter, who seemed to be having a bit of difficulty with the maneuver.
Oh, fiddlesticks. Just give me one moment. Oh, damn it!
Hey, it's okay. You'll work on that algorithm after the meeting. Let me help you out. There you go.
Thanks.
Now, without any further ado, let's start the meeting. Now, it would certainly appear from the contents of this message that Vasily expects you, personally, Rock, to agree to an alliance with his forces versus Kilov. Only the Council can vote on such a thing. It's written in our city's very constitution?
The alliance is a military matter, Rath. You know that. We might have to coordinate with the Red Army to fight the worst enemy, Kilov and his KGB. That battle is not yet over. Kilov has escaped.
Roxen, you call it a military matter, but I call it a political move. You cannot act without a debate in the Council, and I will oppose you tooth and nail.
There was a vote from the Council. Wrath, before I left for Fort Minsk, I was given the authority in advance to carry out any course of action I chose to make to win the damn battle against Kilov. The Council agreed with me that it was a military matter. We've already carried out our part. Vasily is now going to carry out his. All the nuclear weapons in America are to be taken away. It's a tremendous victory.
Yes, all the nukes. Except 5. It's all a trick. That's what I think. A plot between Premier Vasily and Colonel Kilov to get us. Somehow, some way, to get us and destroy us.
Roxen looked hard at Raf. The man had been invaluable, if a bit gloomy, until the past few months. Now he seemed to have gone off his rocker.
Shannon, I'm sorry. I don't have any more time for this man and his personal problems. I respect what you go through, Raf, but we're all working for the greater good. You're so paranoid of losing any more men that you can't let anybody else do what they have to do for the country. So I don't have any more time for your bullshit. Quite frankly, nobody does.
Democracy is being usurped by the military, just as I said. Randolph will hear of this for sure. I know the intent behind it.
I hardly think that's the case. I've seen Roxen work with the Council. He has great respect for them and for the source of their power. The people. As I remember, Rock was given authority at the military convention of all the free-fighting cities to make his own determination about any link-up with the Red Army. Such a council, according to our bylaws, would supersede any Century City Council.
Technically correct, but that convention body is dissolved. Our city's council must be the source of all decisions again.
Regardless of the technicalities, a decision has to be made now. I propose to contact Vasily from a safe location some distance away from Century City. Wrath, how about it? For the sake of the freedom you cherish...
Roxen, when you say freedom, I hear...
Wrath, please. For me, just this once, go along with Roxen.
Okay. For you, Shannon.
Now that it's settled, Roxen, is the relay station 100 miles north of here, the one you previously contacted Vasily from, still in operation?
I don't know. We ripped it up a bit. If Intel Division could supply us that information...
Wrath took out a small loose-leaf notebook from his suit jacket and started thumbing through it. Rock had seen the book before. It was Wrath's little dictionary, containing constantly updated information from spies, mountain men, and Russian radio broadcasts deciphered from their complex codes. The intel chief looked up when he found what he was looking for.
It's out of operation. The Reds moved everything out. But there is a radio base about 50 miles further on. At least you see that I am up on my job, even if you and I don't always have smooth sailing.
I know you are, Wrath. You're the best at what you do. Well, that's still on the way to Idaho, where the missiles were stolen from. Perhaps we could pick up the trail there. Where exactly is it?
Coordinates K-23 on our Soviet field map.
K-23? If I radio Vasily from there, it would save time and not give away Century City. Time is of the essence. I know Kilov. He won't hesitate to use those weapons as soon as he can. And I think the Rockies are going to be their target. There'll be nothing left.
Kilov's position makes him doubly desperate. After Fort Minsk fell and the Red Army retook Washington, D.C., he's been forced to run. Just a few supporters among KGB sympathizing officers in Siberia and the men that helped him steal the cruise missiles remain of all his huge KGB force.
Then let's get cracking. I have a hunch, call it a mutant's premonition, that Kilov is heading way into the north. Perhaps he wants to be in range of Vasily as well as us. We have quite a job ahead of us. I'm glad we're at it united.
Working as a team, Shannon, Wrath, Schechter, and Roxen took out the maps and discussed the route to the K-23 radio station and beyond. The Doomsday Warriors' mood was infinitely better than just moments before. Americans, working together for the common goal, Roxen knew, had been the strongest force for freedom in history. It was only when they were divided, discordant, that they were ever beaten. After the meeting, Roxon went down to the computer room, which had been one of the first sections repaired after the near destruction of Century City. 5 of the 10 computer terminals in the far end of the room, filled with banks of futuristic machines and blinking lights, were fully repaired. Roxon went to the console he preferred to use, the last one over by the wall, and accessed into the central files with his personal ID number and code. Badger. Roxon wanted to bring the smallest force possible with him, knowing that a large team couldn't hope to catch up with Kilov. A small, highly trained, tough group. Men who could endure bitter cold and possibly long periods without shelter or food. Men who would be psychologically as well as physically fit for the rigors ahead. Men, in other words, ready to die. Of course, he would bring Detroit Green, the black free fighter with the best grenade-throwing arm in the city. He would bring Archer, with his crossbow and myriad types of arrows, and Chen, the martial arts master, the Chinese man with a pencil-thin drooping mustache, who could move silently as a cat, could take out 10 men in a flash. McCaughlin, with his great strength, nearly as great as Archer's, he tended to slow things slightly, but he had a knack for keeping up morale that more than made up for it. That would be critical. Besides, McCaughlin could make a palatable meal out of anything, from snake tails to thorn bushes. But he needed more. Rock expected to go on from K-23 to follow Kilov to the North Pole itself, if that was where he was heading. He programmed in the qualities he was looking for. Physical strength, experience in cold terrains, fighting ability, and special qualifications. He needed a linguist to deal with whatever groups inhabited the area, and someone who knew how the hell to defuse an atomic missile, if they ever found them. The computer screen lit up with the names Peterson, Neil, linguistics expert, first rank. Roxon knew the young, nearly bald, stocky man. High intelligence, endurance, plus he got along well with Chen, who was one of his few buddies. Peterson had translated 7 post-nuke war micro-languages and had written a treatise on them. Feral, Timothy. Tim was a lanky, tall, blonde man, and, Rock knew, a favorite of the young ladies of Century City. He was also a marksman, trained in veterinary medicine, having studied the animal sciences. Plus, he was always begging Roxon to take him on a mission. He was about to get his wish now, in spades. The next name the computer came up with was Nelson. They had worked together before, on the way to Fort Minsk. He had managed to communicate with a band of Sioux when the squad had been captured, and had saved all their lives. He was a good man, if a little nervous sometimes. But the problem was he had accumulated too much radiation exposure in the last mission. The man was a fighter, but they had traveled too fast, too far, had spent almost a full day near a nuke crater. The man was now a near invalid, his immune system in shatters, always coughing, gums bleeding. Someone should have put his file in the inactive section. Roxon did it himself, feeling like a heel, but knowing the man would be dead within weeks if he took any more outside exposure. His fighting days were over. The last name was Michael Chet Robinson. The man was an anthropologist, an authority on North American tribes, and on an expedition like this, he would be invaluable. His record showed that he had worked quite a bit with Perkins before he had been killed by a crazy tribe led by a Zen master wannabe named Ginsburg. Anybody that worked with Perkins, Rock considered, was good enough in his book. The file also said he was quite a mountaineer. The man was a good 10 years older than any of the others, but he had recently been checked out as being in perfect health. He'd do. Roxon called the entire team together in the conference room on sea level and explained the mission. He told them they were all volunteers. They could decline. None did so.
Chen, I assign you and McCaughlin. You both seem to have a handle on the supply aspect of our plan to quartermaster for us. I want a detailed list of what we need sent to quartermaster's office on D3 level and a duplicate for me.
I had to open my big mouth. I hate lists and paperwork.
The job's not complete until the paperwork is done, McCaughlin.
And you, Detroit, I want you to make sure we have all the medical supplies we need. Work it out with Doc Elston. I hear you're quite friendly with her since she reattached your right arm in microsurgery a few months back.
Oh? And what, pray tell, might you be doing while we all work?
There's plenty for me to do to get ready. I don't like the idea of using the bridge as transportation. I want to check down in veterinary section, see if any backbred dogs can be brought along. They're intelligent animals. I'd like to have some dog sleds made up if there's any suitable dogs down there. Some of Dr. Schechter's boys might be able to modify some carts, weld on skis. It's winter out there.
Rock, I don't know how to tell you this, but the dogs are all dead. That section of the city collapsed, killing them all, when Century City was bombed.
Shit. I had high hopes for the breeding program. Then it has to be horses. We can't take half-track vehicles. We'd run out of fuel. But the Brids can eat winter vegetation as long as there is any. Even evergreen boughs, if they're mashed up right. I've got to get maps micro-stated for the mission. As I told you, I don't know where we'll wind up. So we're taking along maps for every piece of land north of here.
Roxon assigned tasks to all the men. Getting the Brids, the weaponry from the arsenal, and so on. He went down to the map room. He was appalled that many areas of Canada had no current maps. He was given maps that hadn't been updated in 100 years. Roxon allowed some time for the men to say goodbye to their loved ones. Then they all met for final checkout at the clothing supply room.
Men, each of you take your size parkas. Sorry, only one color, white, for camouflage. The jackets are reversible, though. If we want to keep track of each other, we wear the red side out. Make sure you have everything. We're not turning back for anything.
They loaded up 6 pack brids with all the equipment of every variety that Century City had gathered in 100 years. Sweaters, insulated down parkas, Arctic boots, snow blindness goggles, even a few harpoons for ice fishing. And to pass the time, they brought a chess set. They staggered away under the overstuffed packs on their backs and in their arms, out to the waiting hybrids at the wide exit ramp. It was 5:30 a.m. They hadn't slept that night, and yet each man was eager and alert. Rock had each man double-check his weapons. Each had a Liberator rifle, 20 banana clips for it, a 12-gauge shot pistol and a dozen snap clips, and 2 knives, one for throwing, another for hand-to-hand combat. In addition, Chen had his belt of star knives, some explosive-tipped. Detroit carried 2 bandoliers of grenades, 15 in all. Some were incendiaries. Archer wore a quiver of arrows, some highly specialized killers, over his shoulder, and had a crossbow tied to his huge saddle. Rock had the standard equipment, rifle, shot pistol, 2 knives. But his rifle was special. It was a laser-scoped beauty, with an electro-engraving of Daniel Boone's likeness on the stock. At the first light of dawn, Roxon and his men mounted up in the open mouth of the northwest exit of the underground bastion. One by one, they rode out into the purple sunrise. The team descended into the wood valley. By the time they traversed the vast woodlands, Rock knew it would be night again. The days of February were short and getting shorter. The nuke blasts had tilted the Earth's axis, bringing the winter solstice in March. He shuddered to think of the far north in the winter. In just a few weeks, there would be no daylight at all, where they just might wind up in the Arctic Circle. Black days. Roxon rode Snorter, a hybrid he had used as a mount for many years now. The creature was immensely strong and heavily pelted, the result of generations of breeding of wild mustangs affected by radiation exposure. The Brids, like Snorter and the other mounts that Roxon's men rode, truly lived only when they ran. Their massive, sinewy legs churned away like steam engines as their mouths, gaping wide, sucked in oxygen to fuel their bodies. The attack team rode along in perfect unison at full gallop, each man leaning far ahead around the neck of his Brid to cut down the wind. Even the Doomsday Warrior had a smile on his face as they raced across the purplish-lit land.
Moose!
Where? Oh.
Rock turned in his saddle to look where Archer was pointing. There, on a hillock, was a magnificent moose, with horns big enough for a man to sit in.
Me hunt?
It'd sure make a good dinner. All right, Archer, it's all yours. Russians!
They shot for cover as several Reds came driving out of the woods, unaware of the Free Fighters' presence. They had hit a moose with one of the rack of rockets on the back of a flat-top truck. There were five more men on cycles and about 20 troopers in armored half-tracks, KGB black shirts. But these were sloppier than he had ever seen. A few had vodka bottles in their hands or in their mouths. Usually, KGB were rigid as steel, like their master of murder, Kilov. They would pay for their carelessness.
When I give the signal, waste them. Grenades ready? Frags and phosphorus okay, Detroit?
Scar knives?
No explosives. Just for the wheels. That ought to at least cripple a bunch of them. Then use full auto fire. Deployment method B.
Stop the driving!
The Reds didn't notice the Free Fighters. They were too busy laughing and grabbing pieces of moose, hooves, parts of horn, for souvenirs to take back to Mother Russia.
Look, Nevsky, I will mount this 8-pronged horn over my fireplace in Murmansk.
They will never let you come back to Murmansk. You have grown too used to lax discipline now that Kilov is gone. None of us will ever go back. Let us drink and hunt and raid. Use this land for some fun before the Rads or the Red Army get us.
You are right, comrades. And just for being right, you can have the other horn.
The damage one. Thanks, Chief. You keep the good one and give me the damaged one. I say we should...
We're under attack!
Chen, cover me.
Chen ran forward with a scar knife in each hand until he was within 20 feet of the KGB. Just as the Red turned with his rifle, Chen unleashed his weapons.
Thanks, Chen. My turn now. Chen, they're panicked. Toss a rock.
Shot in. Wolf! Save your ammunition! Fire only when fired upon!
That's the leader. I'm taking him out.
Rock rushed through the tall grass for a good 50 feet without being detected. Chen had shown him just how to move to appear like the wave of the grain of the fields. When the wind moved the grass, he moved. A wave, undetectable. Roxen was higher and behind the KGB-er. The man happened to glance towards the Doomsday Warrior, and they locked eyes. Instead of raising his AK to fire, however, he took off running.
Oh, no you don't!
Get away from me!
Move and his knife goes in.
Surrender! I surrender!
Well, we'll both get up there. Tell your men to drop their arms, okay? Ah!
They slowly got up. The Major was looking for a false move, a way for the tables to be turned. But Rock didn't give him any leeway. With a knife to his throat, he walked with Rock back down the hill.
Surrender! I order you to throw down your weapon!
The groups immediately stood, tossed their rifles, and raised their hands. The surviving men were made to sit with their hands on their heads on the ground. The free fighters, who had frisked them quickly for hidden weapons, stood over them.
How about disposing of this pack of vermin so we can get on with our expedition?
No. They've surrendered. We're not going to kill prisoners. I think we'll let them go without weapons or food. These parts are crawling with mountain men, trappers, all sorts of interesting animals. It's time the KGB learned how to forage, how to hunt, and maybe how to beg the people they come across, people they've been oppressing, for some food, water.
But please, with no weapon, no food, we die!
Okay, take your choice, partner. Die now, or take your chances.
But... please, let us go on our way.
Can do. Pick up their weapons and we'll head out.
But we're still tied up!
If I wanted you guys to stay there forever, I'd have tied a different knot. He'll get out eventually. Let's head out, men!
As they walked, Farrell put a plastisynth bandage on Rock's neck to prevent infection. In addition to his other skills, the lanky blonde man was a pretty fair medic. When they were out of earshot, McCoughlin caught up to Roxon.
Won't they come back after the little meat we left on the moose? Isn't that giving them too much?
I don't think so. Before we left, I sprinkled it with a bit of juice from that Aravallis plant over at the edge of the field.
That'll give them a few nightmares.
The next day, Rock spotted a high, sharp object silhouetted against the sky directly in front of them, about a mile ahead. Rock raised his electron binoculars for a look-see.
That's the radio antenna. You men wait here. McCoughlin and I will go ahead on foot to see what's up.
Rock and the big Scotsman walked down the slope of a long hill, and crawling the last 100 yards, stuck their heads over the ridge. They saw the station below. The doors wide open to the morning air, and two lazy men having a siesta, their rifles over their laps as they slept in the warmth emanating from the doorway.
So they don't expect visitors. Well, what do you think? Do we slip down right now and take them ourselves, or go back and mount a full-scale attack?
Well, we might as well take advantage of the situation. I'd hate to turn down the open-door invitation.
They scurried in a crouch down the slope, and before the guards knew what was up, had them around the necks with knives to their throats.
No noise, pals. Let's go in. Now, open the door.
In the large, brightly lit room sat 6 or 7 technicians in soiled white smocks. They were unarmed, though rifles were stowed carelessly in a corner.
Surprise key!
Everybody freeze!
Don't shoot! We are unarmed! We... Wait. I know you.
You were at the last communications array. The one we raided to speak to Vasily.
I was. I thank you for not shooting me. I am doubting the stories about you putting heads on spikes.
And I see that they didn't crucify you outside Moscow. Good.
Yes, I thought so too. So, you want to use the radio again?
That I do. If you could call the Kremlin for me.
Just a bit more. Ah! Here you are, Mr. Roxon.
This is Roxon calling the Kremlin. Returning Premier Vasily's radio transmission. This is Roxon calling the Kremlin, returning Premier Vasily's radio transmission.
This is the Premier's advisor, Rahala.
Yes, I remember you.
Ah, Roxon, it is good to hear from you again. The Premier is napping. I presume you are responding to the message broadbeamed to you in Colorado?
Correct, Rahala. I've got to speak to him.
It will take a few minutes to wake him and get him to the phone. Can you wait?
Sorry, I'd rather not. Don't try to trace this call either. I'm at a Red Army radio far away from my home base, so let's be brief. The United States government is pleased that Vasily is going through with his removal of all missiles, though we have yet to independently confirm the evacuation has taken place. Assuming that it is true, we would like further assistance in tracking Kilov and his missiles, using satellite readings or anything else you have to help us. Hello? Rahala, are you-
Roxon, do you know what time it is in Moscow? 2 a.m. But I will speak to you. Rahala, stay on the extension.
We can't give you satellite data on the Kilov missiles. You want to know why? Because you destroyed most of our satellites when you blew up the central dome here in Moscow. And even if my jets could locate Kilov's white-painted missiles in the snow, Kilov would launch them the second he knew he was spotted. But I can send you a technician, a major, Sharansky, with a tracking device that can follow Kilov's trail on the ground. If you will send a force strong enough to overcome Kilov and his estimated 150 troops, yet he is sufficiently small to take him by surprise, well, then I think you may have a chance.
Have your man paradrop to your radio base, K-23, tomorrow at noon local time, with the missile tracker, but no tricks.
Somehow, I get the feeling that you don't trust me.
As much as you trust me, Vasily. Once this Kilov thing is cleared up, you and I are enemies again. Over and out.
An older tech started at Roxen, his mouth agape.
You. Oh, what I would give to be able to speak to the Premier like you have.
He's just a man, and we both know where we stand. Now, put your hands down. We're gonna be here for a bit while we wait for this Sharansky. Do any of you guys play poker?
After a thorough search of their persons, McCoughlin found that they were eager to learn, and lose, at poker. At the end of the first few hours, they'd all had 10 cups of powerful tea each from a samovar. When they began putting a little vodka in it, the game was forgotten. The conversation began to roam all over the place. It got interesting.
Freedom. Bah! The government, any government, is only good for taking your money and sending you or your son to war and for blowing up everybody. The revolutions all start out with good intentions, and then power corrupts. I say, back to nature. Chekhov's ideal of real communal living.
No. No, in modern times, centralized government is necessary. A dictatorship of the workers, that is what Lenin wanted.
And is that what you have?
Well, it isn't finalized yet. There are problems.
You have no checks and balances, kid. The U.S. government always had the Supreme Court, the executive branch, and the legislature, and free press to expose and oppose the power grabbers. Kept it all above board, whether some politicians wanted it that way or not. All people born equal, but after that, they get according to the exertion and ingenuity they put out. A meritocracy. From each according to his ability, to each according to his efforts.
In communist theory, it is to each according to his needs.
Sounds like a system for slackers. Anyway, communism doesn't even do that. It's all a farce. They use slogans. The workers ruling, freedom of the masses, and all that. And then they do just the opposite.
True communism will come. Someday. My government promises me that when the wars are over, socialist men will rise once and for all.
Someday. In the meantime, everyone is a slave.